I'm looking for those three things. I want highlight, which is the brightest part of the face, the mid-tone, which is the natural part of the face, and then the shadow, which is the darkest part of the face. I want all three of those on five parts of the face. That's the forehead, the nose, both cheeks, and the chin. So the shadows aren't raccoon eyes. The shadows aren't, you know, half the face is in light, half the face is in shadow. I'm trying to make sure I have good light and on the forehead, the nose, both cheeks, and the chin. And I call those the five planes of the face.
Hey, welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Raymond Hatfield. And today we are chatting with portrait photographer Chris Duncan about creating beautiful light with just an umbrella. But first, the Beginner Photography Podcast is brought to you by CloudSpot. Simplify your business with studio management, organize clients, send professional contracts, automate invoice payments, and more. Keeping track of everything in growing a photography business just got easier. You can grab your free forever account over at deliverphotos.com and only upgrade when you and your business are ready. Now, Chris has been on the podcast before. The first time was like 4 years ago, and I still get emails today from listeners who say that the way that Chris explains light makes trying it out so much easier than they imagined. So today, I promise you, is going to be no different. In today's interview, Chris shares how light shapes stories. He explains how to control light to sculpt the narrative of your photos, using a hierarchy of contrast to direct the viewer's attention where you want it most. He also tells you why you should embrace manual mode with flash, and that to unlock the full potential of your creativity, shooting manual with flash will allow you to better understand how aperture and shutter speed interact with flash, allowing you to master your light every time. And lastly, Chris talks in depth about how to use his favorite and affordable flash modifier, the umbrella, to soften light, which adds depth and nuance to your portraits, and honestly elevates the professional quality of the images that you are able to create. So there's a lot in this episode. Go ahead and buckle up and get ready. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's interview with Chris Duncan. Chris, I want to know, when did light become an important element in photography for you? You've been shooting for a long time. When did you know that light was going to be your thing?
Man, starting off deep. I'm not sure when I knew exactly light was going to be important. I knew I wanted my work to improve. I was enjoying photography. I'd kind of been dabbling in it for a while. It's something that, I've kind of wanted to do. I've enjoyed since I was a kid. I was into my married life. We had a young child and kind of wanted to make it a business. And that was around 2002, sometimes around then. But anyway, later on, I just knew my work. I wanted to improve it. And so I started taking some courses. And one of the first ones I went to was from Tony Corbell, who hopefully some of your listeners know who he is. If they don't, they need to look him up. He's at the sunset years of his career now, but he was a big influence for a lot of photographers in my generation and the one above me, just teaching light and how it can impact a scene. And I took classes from him probably six times.
Really? Wow.
Yes, just because he taught so much. His wealth of knowledge was so expansive. And my first time, I could only grab like a tenth of it or a fifth. You know, I just didn't have the capacity to get all of it. So I had to go back and revisit to get a little more and a little more and a little more. So he definitely played a big influence in lighting for me. And now we're close friends and go on vacations together and have dinners together. So that's been really fun.
How fun. I love that about photography, the ability to create those connections. And
yes, for sure.
Unknowingly in the beginning. It's so interesting.
This is such an open profession. It's such a sharing profession. And I'm sure there's some that are tight-lipped and keep everything to their vest. But man, the majority of people just want to see great work and great images and be inspired by it. And so they share so that can happen and spread.
I totally agree. So when you're taking, say, that first class on lighting, right? I'm sure that you left super excited or super overwhelmed, you know, probably a little bit of both. When you got home and you took out the flash and you got to work, was it as easy as Tony had made it look, or did you fall into some trial?
No, it wasn't even close. You know, it's like, I don't know if what sport you follow, but I really enjoy baseball. Okay. Well, I enjoy golf, and there's probably some similarities to it. Is that you watch a pro game or a pro's, those guys get up there and like, oh, that looks so simple, right? I could do that. And you visualize it in your head, like, well, next time I'm at the mound or next time I'm at the bat, I know what to do. And it's just a disaster. So it was kind of that same way with me. I had so much of my mental capacity trying to think my way through the processes that I think that bogged down the natural and instinctive ability that was probably inside me. It just hasn't blossomed yet. And so that's something now I pass on to my students. It's like sitting in a chair or listening to watching a YouTube video or hearing a podcast. That's great. That's a good first step, but that's not where it ends. You then have to implement it. You have to practice it because that's where it becomes manifest. You can't just watch a Dodgers game and say, okay, now I can play great baseball. You have to go and you have to practice it. And then you have to revisit it. Just like I had to go to Tony's class again. I had forgotten some of the techniques because I was so bogged down on maybe this one. And I had to keep refilling that tank and practice it, of course. So it didn't come easy. It probably took about a year, which may be a gulp moment for some of your listeners, to where I really felt that it became instinctive.
A year before it really felt instinctive as far as like using it. Were you using it in a commercial setting, or was this for just personal photos?
No, it was all commercial. It was all for our business. And what I mean by instinctive is where you becomes almost second nature. You don't have to think about it, right? You just kind of set it up by instinct. You're like, okay, I know this is going to work. It's predictable. I've practiced it enough that this is the result I'm going to get. So
I see. So I know that you've obviously come a long way because today you teach lighting. Your workshops as well are helping countless other photographers. But I know that one thing that a lot of beginners struggle with, when you talk about light, their eyes kind of glaze over and they're like, what are you talking about? Like, there's light everywhere. I don't understand what you mean by, you know, phrases like see the light. Can you help us to better understand the importance of learning how to use light?
You're correct. Light is everywhere. But it may not be the light that's most flattering to your subjects. Or the light that's in the best position to render detail and texture and depth and shape. So what I've had to do is create a hierarchy. And what I mean by hierarchy is, and everyone has a different hierarchy. Mine isn't the correct one. It's not necessarily the wrong one either, but it's just what I put value on. And so when I'm looking at lighting, there's kind of a list I want to make sure it achieves. And if it can achieve these three objectives, then I feel like I've worked on my job. You know, one is I want to make sure it provides enough contrast it makes up for the difference to what my eye can see and my camera can record, because those are two different values. We've probably all seen a beautiful scene and take a picture and you're like, that looks nothing like what's garbage in front.
Yeah.
And so what our eye can record is so much greater than what our camera can record and even what our paper can print, which really comes down to five stops of dynamic range. So one, I want my lighting to be able to be in a workable contrast that the print looks nice and acceptable. I want to make sure it has shape, depth, and form, that I see three-dimensional context in a two-dimensional media. And then finally, if possible, I want it to try to enhance the story that we're trying to tell. And so that's kind of my hierarchy I work through.
Wow.
And if I can achieve those, then I've satisfied my needs and I've probably satisfied the client's needs or exceeded them.
Sure. Sure. How is it that light does that? Like, how is it that, let me rephrase that question. How is it that using artificial light does that?
On the first part about making up for the difference, what our eye sees and the camera can record is what I think a lot of beginning photographers, it's a hard concept to grasp. It just is. But when you do, it's really freeing. Is that most of us a lot of photographers understand the exposure triangle and how it's conversely relative to each other. So if we're just in an ambient situation and we decide to change our shutter speed, our aperture has to change the opposite direction to balance out the light, right? So it still stays balanced. And I call it the exposure balance and not the exposure triangle to balance. But when we add artificial lighting, and I don't mean like constant lighting, I mean an electronic flash, a brief and brilliant burst of light that comes from a strobe or an electronic flash, those two exposure controls become separated. So now our flash intensity or our flash brightness stays consistent on whatever it hits. So let's say it's, I know you do a lot of wedding photography, so let's say it's the bride and groom outside of their venue and it's a beautiful day. So you light them with off-camera flash, that intensity is going to stay the same every time it fires. So as long as your clients are in that flash cone of light, their exposure is consistent. So now your shutter speed can go faster or slower to adjust the sunlight or the ambient light that's in the space. And that's where it becomes so powerful to help me control that contrast. Because now I can really, I mean, in layman's terms, I can control the sun to an extent that way. Or I can control the brightness of the reception or the brightness of the home or whatever place we happen to be.
So I appreciate you sharing that. That next question for beginners, once they understand, and I'm sure that they've heard, balance or expose for the ambient and then add in your flash so that you can control that exposure.
Yes.
The next question I always seem to hear is, why even bother taking the flash off camera? What is that going to do for our photos?
Okay, well, that hits my second priority, right? My hierarchy, which is to create shape, form, and dimension and try to render a three-dimensional quality on a two-dimensional media. And so that means we have to have highlight, midtones, and shadows. So the more we can get it off camera into a 45 or greater angle from camera to subject, we're going to introduce a shadow that's visible. You know, if there's a shadow, there, if the light's on camera, it's just on the back of the person, so you don't see it. So I want to move that shadow around to the side at some point to give me that depth.
But like, and I know that this is kind of hard to talk about because this is an audio based podcast, right? People are listening and they're trying to figure this out in their head. But like, why would you want shadow on somebody's face? Are we talking hard raccoon eyes? Like what does that look like from your perspective?
Well, sticking to portraits, because I'm assuming that's probably where a lot of your listeners are. Yeah. I'm looking for those three things. I want highlight, which is the brightest part of the face, the midtone, which is the natural part of the face, and then the shadow, which is the darkest part of the face. I want all three of those items on five parts of the face. It's the five plans. That's the forehead, the nose, both cheeks, and the chin. So the shadows aren't raccoon eyes. The shadows aren't, you know, half the face is in light and half the face is in shadow. I'm trying to make sure I have good light and on the forehead, the nose, both cheeks, and the chin. And I call those the five planes of the face. And that's what gives us the dimension. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners took art class in third grade or second grade. And, you know, that may be recent for some. It may be a long time ago for others. But in my art class, we drew a circle. And it just looked like a circle. And then you shade one side of it and it starts looking like a ball, right? It starts having that dimensionality. And then so one side is bright and one side gradually gets shaded. And that's the same thing with photography. I want to create that shading to give me depth. Without the shadows, you don't have it. And if you're photographing something that's dark tone, darker skin or dark clothing, then you need highlights. On Caucasian skin, you see the shadows that render shape. That's how your eye perceives it. On darker skin, you see the highlights that help render shape. They're both present. Mm-hmm. It's just relative to the tone it's on. So that's what I'm looking for.
Ooh, that's next level stuff to try to imagine there in your head when getting started.
Yeah.
Then kind of walk me through a little bit, I guess, before we move forward, because I got some questions specifically about like modifiers and whatnot as well. We're going to add on to that conversation. But before we get into that, for somebody brand new, right, all that they've ever used before is just their camera. What are kind of some of the most basic components that they need just to get started with taking their flash off of camera.
Okay. Well, before we even take the flash off the camera, I think there's two items that a photographer needs when they're going to be working on location, which means outdoors or at a venue, not in a controlled environment like a studio. Would be, I would get some type of reflector, a just pop out reflector, you know, that's usually white on one side. Maybe it's silver or gold on the other. It could be black. I like the white and black ones. I think you need one of those.
Why? Why do we need the reflector with the white side, the black side, and then a translucent side? What will that do for us?
Okay, well, the reflector will allow you to control the amount of light that hits the shadow side. So we're going to assume now, based on our previous conversation, that we're going to put some type of directional light where we see shadow. Well, maybe the shadow is too dark to your liking or to your client's preference. So the reflector will help bounce light back into that shadow side of the face, reducing the density of the shadow. Okay. The black side would actually increase the density of the shadow. And so if you want more shadow, so maybe you're in a place that it's really flat lighting and you need to try to introduce like an overcast day or open shade, you need to introduce more depth. The black side helps you do that. Okay. And that's just without using flash.
Right. Yeah, I know. That's why. So this is like, if somebody's trying to picture it in their head, we have a person in front of our camera and mm-hmm. say off to the left, we have a flash, but then, I take that back. Off to the left, we have our sun, right? It's just, it's the ambient light. And then off to the right, we have a reflector here. So we're almost placing them in the middle of like this sandwich between light and the reflector. Is that about right?
That's a pretty good visual for it. Yes.
I figured I would try to introduce some sort of food reference since we seem to just do this naturally every time we.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Okay. So the person is the meat of the sandwich, the sun, and then the reflector, they're the bread. The light is the bread.
Yes.
So, okay. Now let's talk about the translucent aspect as well.
Okay. So the way the translucence does is it helps you modify the size of the sun. So maybe they're in dappled light under a tree. Maybe the light is too harsh and they comfortably can't even keep their eyes open to get a nice portrait. The diffusion scrim allows the sun to transmit through it, translucent, right, to transmit through it. And that will soften the light source because it makes it bigger and it gives you just a little bit more control on how the light impacts the face. But those are two really affordable tools to start using. Granted, you need someone to hold those for you.
Not as cheap, but hopefully if you have a child, then you have some cheap labor who might do there it. You go. Milkshake or something.
There you go.
Okay, so now getting into the flash side of it, right? So we know that we need a flash. Like what mm-hmm. else? Is there anything else that we need?
Well, you're needing some way to, since it's off camera, you're going to need something that the camera tells the flash you're ready for it to fire. Some type of radio transmitter or a cord or some type of way to get the signal from the camera to the flash that I want you to fire at this when I press the shutter button. A lot of cameras and flashes have those built in now. So if you're a Canon shooter, a Canon flash will communicate, you know. Then you're going to need some type of stand or another assistant to hold that flash. You can't just set it on the ground and have it point up in the air. Got to have some type of support mechanism to hold it. And then as far as a modifier, I always tell my students, get the largest one they can afford and they feel safe using. Hmm. I mean, and the plains of West Texas, an umbrella bigger than 4 feet is really, it's really hard to maintain. I mean, it catches a lot of wind. Mm-hmm. So I would use maybe an Octabox or something outside, but, the problem with the flash and when I say flash, I'm thinking on camera flash, that unit that can go on your camera, it can go off, is it's just that light source is always going to look the same until you modify it, no matter how far away you put it or how close you put it, or if you put it to the left or the right or off to the side, it's such a direct, intense light source, it's always going to produce a very crisp and hard light quality.
Mm. Is that not natural? Is that why you want to change that?
I wouldn't say it's not natural. Our experience has been that it's not as flattering because it reveals more imperfections in the skin because it introduces a more defined shadow. Mm-hmm. So if you have raised texture on your skin through wrinkles or acne or eczema or anything like that, it's gonna exaggerate that. Whereas a softer shadow will diminish that. So
I see. And we get a softer shadow through a modifier. Is that right?
The larger the light source we can get, the softer we can create the shadow to be. So you could even use that translucent diffuser we just talked about and place it in front of your flash, just like you would the sun, and enlarge that source.
Okay, so let's go there, because that was that part of the conversation I was ready to have a little bit later, because I feel like the size of a light source can be a very hard thing for new photographers to grasp. In fact, when I was in film school, it was a hard thing for me to grasp. Like, the larger the light source, the better the light. And I never understood it until I actually saw it. But yes, those who maybe their brain works a little bit better than mine, is there any way that you can help describe why the physical size of a light source is important?
Yeah, and I will try to do it the best I can on an audio podcast.
Yeah, we can always try.
Let's just stick with portraits, right? And think of the average size of the human head, right? So maybe the size of a football or a soccer ball, right? Depending on how slender or chubby the person may be. Okay. And most human heads are about the same size once they hit probably adolescence. Okay. So let's look at that square footage. Let's just call it one square foot. A face is one square foot. We're just going to call it that. Well, our flash, if we just use our flash, it's about 5 square inches. 6 square inches, right? It's 2 by 3, 2 by 4, you know, 3 by 4, something like that. So that's a big difference between 1 square foot and 6 square inches. So that size, relative size difference is great. So that smaller size of the light compared to the larger size of the subject is going to produce a very defined shadow edge, very crisp shadow, like you would get on the sun when you go out on a bright sunny day. So if we can use a 4-foot umbrella or a 3-foot octobox or one of those pop out translucents that now is maybe, let's see, maybe 8 square feet. Well, that's quite larger than our 1 square foot face. And so it's not just how big the source is, it's how big it is relative to our subject. And so I just try to always look at it as really relative space, right? Is this light source physically bigger than my subject? If it is, you should start seeing softer light quality. If it's smaller than my subject, you will get crisp, defined light quality.
Mm-hmm. So the physical size isn't enough, right? We can have a 4-foot, you know, say umbrella, but if its relative size is smaller, say it's like 40 feet away.
Correct.
We're still going to get, say, the same effect as if it was just a bare flash a foot away from our subject.
Correct. Yeah. It's size relative to distance. Mm. So, but most photographers won't put it 40 feet away. They're going to end up placing it about 6 to 7 feet away, maybe a little, you know, somewhere in that range. Mm. So
is there some sort of, I don't know if there is or not, I've never really thought of this. Is there some sort of mathematical equation to determine what the relevant size of a light source should be? Obviously, it's a bit subjective to your subject.
I would think it would just be trigonometry. You'd have to draw some top. So let's really get this complicated.
Go.
It's the cosine of the tangent to the adjacent angle of the light
beam. You lost me. You totally lost me.
You know, some. Dang it. I don't know of like a quick mathematical formula. You know, what I tell my students is like, if you, it's kind of like when you stand far away from something, I can pinch your, you know, you can pinch someone's head in this little bitty space between your thumbs,
yeah.
You know, or you've seen those perspective photos where someone looks like they're holding up the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Well, they have to be a long way away to do that, to change that relative size. Mm-hmm. So that makes the Leaning Tower of Pisa look really small compared to that person, right? If they get closer to it, then they can't have that same same relative look because it's obviously larger.
Yeah.
And so.
Hey, Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos. I do this trick with my kids because they always love to see, you know, every once in a while, there will be a moonrise in the evening. And they're like, look at how big the moon is. Like, why is the moon so much bigger, like in the evening than it is, you know, when it's, say, it's midnight and it's in the top of the sky. And I had them do this experiment where it was like, if you just take your pinky, right, and you hold it out at arm's length, you can cover up the moon with just your pinky nail. Whether it's, and that's how you'll know that when it's at the horizon, it's the exact same size as it is when it's, you know, up in the sky. It just appears different. And I think for them, that helped to understand, like, oh, maybe being surrounded by trees or like other buildings changes its perceived relative size, I suppose.
That's correct. Yeah. But
I thought that was interesting. So when it comes to using something like an umbrella, right? Because an umbrella is, I mean, for most photographers, it's the first modifier that they buy. It's one of the cheapest. It can fold down very small. They can take it with them wherever they go. And then it can also open up large, right? So is an umbrella even like a good modifier to use? Because with how cheap they are, does that mean that they're garbage quality? Like, from your perspective, is that a good starting modifier?
Absolutely. I think they are. And they sometimes are included in a starter kit. Mm. Right. And they're just less expensive because they cost less to manufacture. Right. It's passing the savings on to the customer, per se. I think an umbrella is a great modifier. And we could spend a whole podcast on which modifier is appropriate for which job. And you could get 10 photographers in here and probably have 10 different opinions on that. But an umbrella will definitely create a larger size if you want to get off of the look you always have from just an off-camera flash. You're going to have to modify it, and an umbrella is an easy way to modify it without a lot of different type of attachments and rigs to connect it. You know, it's hard to put a big softbox in a flash. That gets really complicated. Mm-hmm. It's not complicated to put a large umbrella onto a flash. You just need one little piece, an umbrella adapter that connects to your stand and your flash, and you're done. And that's probably a $15 piece. I mean, so that's very affordable as well.
Sure. So then I think in my mind, the question becomes, how do we get the best looking photos out of an umbrella before we should be investing in something like a softbox or a different type of modifier?
Well, for one, it increases the size. So that's already going to give you, and I'm not saying it's a better light quality. It's just going to be a softer light quality, which, and for portraits, tends to be more pleasing on the client's end, right? The hard shadows just somehow don't seem to be as accepted. At least that's been our experience. You know, no, everybody's different. Every client's different. And it allows you to maybe photograph more than one person in nice, consistent lighting when you have a larger light source. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's the ease of setting up is going to help. We still want it out of direction. So we still want to introduce highlight, mid-tone, and shadows. Still want those. But I think your listeners, would, if they haven't done this before, would be quite surprised at the difference it would make. Sure. And it's noticeable. There's a lot of things that give you a subtle difference, and it takes more an attuned eye to kind of see that. But this is like, whoa, this is a big difference. Where have you been all my life type thing?
That's what I said to my wife. So when, let's imagine photographers, right? They get their flash for the first time, they get their umbrella, they get the adapter to be able to mount the two together. Now what? Are we just putting it right in front of us, right behind us? Like, where do we position this to just say that we're just photographing one person right now?
Okay.
That flash go. How do we get a good photo?
I think a good starting point is 45 degrees. So if you draw a line between your camera and your subject, that's your one line. So 45 degrees to the left or right of that, right? Positioned towards your subject. That's going to automatically introduce highlight, midtone, and shadow at that 45 degrees. And about 6 feet away, you know, arm's length away. I'm doing all these motions like people can see me. you know, like arm's length away. That's a good starting point. And then from there, you can do fine little adjustments. But that'll introduce you some really nice quality light that's going to be sellable and pleasing almost 99% of the time.
Sure. So is this something that, like, you set up in a park, or is this like specifically just a studio thing? Like, where can you set this up?
I think you can set it up anywhere in a park. Obviously be wary of the wind. That's going to be your biggest component with an umbrella outside. So you may need someone to still hold that and to keep it steady, or sandbags. And, you know, then you're just getting into, you know, heavier stands. I mean, there's lots of different ways to secure it. Or in the studio, or go to someone's home, or a wedding venue, hotel, you know, a wedding chapel, all the different venues they have for that. Absolutely. And you can set one up and tear it down, and, you know, probably longer than it takes you to set up your, I mean, less time than it takes you even set up your camera.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. I got a question for you. And this is going to be like, again, day one, minute one of setting up this flash and umbrella setup, because I just realized, or just remembered rather, that I had seen this in a Netflix show once, and I thought to myself, what in the world are they doing? When you set up the stand and the flash and the umbrella, what direction should it be pointing? Should the flash be pointed into the umbrella, which is in between the flash and your subject, mm-hmm. or should it be turned around to then bounce the light from the umbrella onto your subject? Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, there's two types of main umbrellas. There's one that's called a bounce umbrella, where the outside of it is going to be black and the inside is going to be some type of reflective material, white or silver. I prefer the white ones. Mm-hmm. Then there's a translucent umbrella, where the whole umbrella is this kind of shower curtain white material. If you're using the bounce umbrella, black on the outside, white on the inside, I point the shaft of the umbrella towards my subject. So the flash is pointing away from the subject into the umbrella, and then it bounces back. Mm-hmm. If I'm using the umbrella that's shower curtain material, translucent, then the shaft of the umbrella is facing away from my subjects. The flash is still oriented the same. It's still into the umbrella. Either one I use, the flash is still going into the opening of the umbrella. Mm-hmm. Just if it's bounced, the shaft of the umbrella points towards the subject. If it's translucent, it points away from the subject.
Perfect. From your end, like, what's the difference between those two, and how should somebody decide if they're just getting started?
The difference between those two is really how the light exits the modifier. It's going to exit it relative to its shape. And I know we're getting really complicated, maybe for radio, but since the translucent is going to be more dome shaped, it's going to send light in 180 degrees. Anywhere that it's translucent, the light leaves it in that direction. And so the bounce is not quite as dome shaped. So it leaves it more narrow, where the translucent will leave it much wider.
So what does that look? Is that just a change in shadow on the subject's face, or what?
It could be a change in the subject's face. You know, if you're in a wedding venue and there's white ceilings, the translucent one is nice because it's going to send light up too, because that dome shape is facing the ceiling, facing your subject, and facing the floor. So it's going to send light to the floor, and it's going to send light to the ceiling, which may give you a greater range that light is effective. Where a bounce umbrella sends a much narrower beam of light that it may not hit the ceiling or the floor.
Right. Is there a, and this is hard, this is a hard question. Is there a hard and fast rule for when to use each one, or could you use both for either?
Absolutely. I think you could use both. I wouldn't say they're interchangeable because there are those subtle differences. But either one of them would yield good results. Mm-hmm. I prefer a bounce umbrella personally. I think the light leaving it is more efficient, meaning it's more consistent across its output from like edge to edge of the light, where a translucent tends to have a brighter center and a darker edge. So you get more of a hot spot with the light leaving a translucent than you do a bounce.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm just working through this one. I haven't really been in this situation. I haven't used a bounce umbrella before. Would a bounce umbrella be better for, say, group portraits rather than just like a single headshot or something?
My answer is usually it depends, right?
Just from your perspective, let's say that we had, a family of five, right? And they're getting together, and you're going to, you need to illuminate them somehow. What would you, Chris Duncan, choose?
I would use a bounce umbrella again, because the center, the way the light hits the umbrella and bounces back and comes out of it, it's more efficient from, I say corner to corner, but it's round from edge to edge. The middle, most modifiers are, the center is brighter than the edge. That's just the nature. That's the science and the physics of it. A bounce umbrella seems to make those differences less than a shoot through umbrella.
There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear, like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar. Gotcha. Let's say somebody's getting started. Maybe they know how to use their camera. They know how to control it. They've even used flash before a little bit. And they're getting started shooting weddings, right? They're going to take their flash to a wedding. And now it's time for family photos, up at the altar. Mm-hmm. This was something that in the beginning I struggled with, because I would only bring the one umbrella with me. And mm-hmm. I found that, everything on the right side of my frame, they were very well lit. Everybody on the left side of my frame, not so much. Sorry, grandma, right? What's the answer to that? Is it changing the modifier or is it multiple umbrellas?
Both. I would stick with an umbrella in that scenario just because it's so easy to set up and tear down, and it doesn't take up a lot of space when you collapse it like a softbox or something would. I would just move to a larger umbrella. Maybe indoors you can get away with a 7-foot umbrella, which to your listeners goes, man, that sounds really big. And it is. And it is. But again, it's that relative size to my group. Now I don't have one head that's a single square foot. I may have 6 or 7 or 12 or 15. So now I've got a larger square footage that I have to light appropriately. So my light needs to be a larger square footage relative to them. So I think a good rule of thumb, I'm going to stick with bounce umbrellas because I think personally they're the easiest to control, and they get you the most consistent spread of light across your image. Is the shaft of the umbrella should point to the farthest end of your group.
Okay, gotcha.
And that'll help even out and distribute the light as efficiently across the group as possible. It may not be perfect. It may still take some adjustments, but the more the shaft is pointed towards the farthest end or past that point, the more efficient the light will be across the group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, I always found that I could salvage the photo, you know, in editing, but it was never ideal. And I think that that's one thing that a lot of times I would forget, that it was, even though, you know, sometimes because of the speed of a wedding, you may not always be able to get it like perfectly right and be able to do it, you know, by the books every single time. We do still have some flexibility in editing. When it comes to flash, from your perspective, do we still have that same flexibility, or do we have to take different approach to editing?
No, I think you still have that same flexibility. If you just happen to misposition your light and one side got a little bit darker, you still have the ability to open up shadows and or tone down highlights or stuff like that. You still have that ability to do. But where I think it's even more powerful using flash in your editing is now, as we talked about earlier, my ambient light is controlled by my shutter speed. Right? We separate those two exposure controls. From flash just determines my aperture, and ambient light is now affected by my shutter speed. So now you can change your shutter to introduce more light in the background or even on that shadow side from maybe a window or lights that are already present in the space too. So it gives you so much more flexibility using off-camera flash.
Let me ask you a question. Just so that we can hopefully again wrap our head around this concept, right? When you change your shutter speed, right? Let's say that there's no flash involved. We're just out and we're taking a photo. When we change our shutter speed, the photo gets brighter or darker, right? Correct. That's the only setting that we're going to change.
Correct.
But when you introduce flash and you change your shutter speed, whatever's being hit by the flash, the exposure doesn't change.
Correct.
Can you explain that for new photographers?
Yes, because your flash moves at the speed of light. So time has, unless you move into high speed sync, right? And I don't do that very often. So let's ignore that technology. Let's just forget high speed sync exists. Until you get to that point where you need high speed sync, time is not a factor on your flash because it happens so fast. So when you press a shutter button, that flash fires, whatever it hits, we're assuming is your subject, your person, whatever it hits in that instant is burned into the sensor. It's exposed. And then the amount of time that shutter is open after that flash fires, if you're using first curtain sync, or before that flash fires, if you're using rear curtain sync, burns in anything that flash does not touch.
So when we change our shutter speed, that's not adjusting the flash,
but right,
still. So what that's doing is that's just changing the amount of time that that the light not coming from the flash is hitting our sensor, and that's why that light either becomes brighter or darker. But that's
correct. That's correct.
Whew.
That's okay. Correct.
We know that there.
It's a difficult concept. If you've only photographed in ambient light and you've only photographed on a program mode, you know, where you've used exposure compensation, this is like, what? Hold on. Let me hear say that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, one more time. So I think to really do this effectively, you need to go to manual mode, because then you would only change your aperture based upon how bright your flash is. Mm-hmm. And you would only change your shutter speed based upon how bright or dark you want the non-flash areas. I call it the ambient. Typically, we can refer to it as the background. It's the park behind our subjects, or it's the reception hall at the wedding, or, you know, the altar behind our people at the wedding, or whatever it may be.
I know that talking about these things, and it's challenging, I think, sometimes to have these conversations, because this is technically the beginner photography podcast, you know, and I try to have these conversations that are geared towards beginners, and hopefully allows them to expand their knowledge base some, so that they have somewhere to start going towards when they feel like they've reached
that. Yes.
And that's why I think today we have to have these conversations. So one, I just have to say, I appreciate you coming on here and, not only talking about light from an authoritative space, right? You've had a lot of use of light, a lot of experience with it, but also, trying to speak to it in a way that many beginners can better understand without making us feel, you know, dumb, because that happens a lot in this space, right? You can, you know, you can just start talking about the, you know, the trigonometry and the cosine functions and the, you know, all those things. But you didn't do that, except for that one time, of course. But
I was joking, yeah.
Yeah, of course. So one, I want to say thank you for that. But now that we have this knowledge, what do we do with it?
You gotta practice.
Where do we start?
Maybe start with, you know, don't torture your kids again to do this. Okay. Guilty. Guilty.
Yes.
I have so many pictures of my daughter with a scowl on her face. Like, really? You gotta do this again. But get something that has shape to it. You know, I mentioned the basketball. Maybe you have some type of helmet or something that looks like a face, you know, a costume or whatever, something that can render shape. You know, it could even be a balloon or a soccer ball or something like that. Photograph that, right? And put your umbrella on your flash about 6 feet away. Again, at that 45 degrees is a good starting point. So if you move your umbrella to the right side of your camera, the shaft should point to the far left side of the right side of your subject or your left side from camera position. If you move it to the left side, it should be the opposite, because the shaft always goes to the farthest edge of my image. And take some pictures, right? Go to manual and start adjusting your shutter speed and look how the background changes brightness. Don't adjust your aperture if the exposure on your subject is correct, and visually see it. You know, do this in your kitchen. Do it by a window where you can see the window light change. Do it outside, you know, and you got to practice it.
You got to do it. Can't just listen to these conversations or watch videos. You have to actually do it. I'm still waiting for one person to just watch every YouTube video on photography without ever picking up a camera and getting some sort of like degree or calling themselves a master photographer, but I haven't seen it yet. Yes. Which again is just proof that you have to do it.
Right.
So, Chris, again, thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
This is technically this is your third time on the show. And I feel like every time you come on, I get some sort of email or, a message saying like, wow, that Chris guy really helped me out figuring out some light.
Oh, good. So
for everybody else who's listening right now, who maybe they're trying to figure out, where do I go with this? You know, what do I do? Where can we learn more about you and any sort of lighting resources that you have?
Okay. Well, name's Chris Duncan, C-R-I-S. There's no H. Instagram's where you can see a lot of our work. My website is cjduncanseniors.com. We do a lot of high school seniors. See some work there. Some commercial work at cjduncan.biz. If you want to see some of that. As far as learning resources, I've been doing education for a while, over 20 years in the industry. And have a resource. It's learn.findyourfocus.org. And since we're talking about umbrellas, I think it's fair to say I did a class at Imaging USA in January called the Umbrella Academy. And it was all using umbrellas as the modifiers to create unique different looks for your subjects. And I have a free resource there if you want to see lighting diagrams and some images that I created using those lighting diagrams. You can get that for free. And that is at learn.findyourfocus.org/courses/umbrella. It should be on the homepage. It says Umbrella Academy. There is a premium access. If someone wants more and they feel like I just need more information, you can pay for the premium access. And we go through really what we talked about today, like how to position the light, where to place the light, how the size impacts the light, this exposure question, like how is aperture and flash and shutter speed all separated now. We go into that more detail if that's something one of your listeners need as well. But if you just want some of those inspiration for lighting diagrams, that is free. Just make sure you click the free preview button on that course.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with a friend. Start a conversation. Grow together. That is it for this week. Remember, the more that you shoot today, the better of a photographer you will be tomorrow. Talk soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.